Good morning and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown. You know, I've talked about the importance of storytelling many times on this show, but today we're going to probe a little bit into what makes a story, a personal story, worth remembering and, more important, worth telling. These are stories that begin with seeds planted from our memories of remarkable times and people, periods in our life peppered with everything from turbulence to triumph. These are often difficult stories whose content makes it challenging to express or sometimes even uncomfortable to hear, but always these are stories that are necessary to tell. My guest tellers have such stories. They're former students of mine. Yes, they passed. No bribing or anything. These are terrific people that I respect greatly. They're not professional tellers, but refreshingly real tellers who have something very special in common. Each bring a relentless sense of honesty to their stories. Lisa Pearson's passion for theater, dance, playwriting, and education is demonstrated perfectly by her work as a teaching artist at Main Street Theater. She guides children through the creative drama process by letting them craft their own original work, encouraging them to choose their characters, plot, conflict, then performing it before friends and family. You know, compassion and a sense of spiritualism, I've recently learned, really does fuel her role as educator and as a volunteer in our community. She's also a poet. Her first book, Perishable, is ready to be published. East Texas native Charles Chuck Hutchison spent 8 years in L.A. pursuing an acting career. He's done commercials, industrials, and a few films. Recently, he was on stage with the Landing Theater Company's production of Rachel Axler's Smudge. Rare for an undergraduate, Chuck will also be directing After Eden. See, I put Chuck and Smudge together and you get Chudge.
There you go.
Right? I like that. A main stage production this fall at UHD. He's also received awards for artistic excellence and nominated for Best Actor for the 2011-12 season at the University of Houston downtown. He's a loving husband and father, and he plans to go to graduate school and teach on the university level, and these are two of some of the best students that our university has to offer, and I'm really honored to have them. Good morning to you both.
Good morning to you both.
Lisa, we're going to start with you, and I have to tell you, before we get into your story about your grandmother, I want to tell our listeners I was a little worried because you didn't contact me for a week, and then you finally did, telling me, you know, I had these friends that I took for an ultrasound, but it's not that simple. Tell us a little bit about that story, because I think it's going to punctuate the kind of person you are.
Well, my life takes some interesting twists and turns, and recently I've been doing a lot of work to collect signatures because of the food ordinance that was recently passed in our city that restricts sharing food with the homeless.
Yes.
And while I was collecting signatures, I went over to Lakewood because I knew that I would meet a lot of people who would be interested in signing my petition, and there was a very young couple, and after they signed my petition, the woman of the couple, she turned to me and she goes, "We're homeless." And in my brain, I had this simultaneous response of like, uh-oh, and you can help her. So I took her number because I had some resources for her, and I got to know her over a couple of weeks. And then, well, actually, they ended up staying with me. So they're staying in my home right now. They were living in their truck, and we took them in for an ultrasound and found out that they are going to have a baby girl.
So you're giving them a home. You took them to get an ultrasound. You are really responsible for them getting to the hospital, making sure that everything worked well, and that's the kind of person you are.
Yes, I think that makes life rich.
It makes life rich, and it makes the studio rich right now, and it makes so many things rich, and I really wanted to thank you for that. And I know that you're a very caring person, and I know that many times people will provide an impetus for you in terms of your incentives and your motives, and your grandmother was very important to you, and you've got a short story about your grandmother that you want to share with
us. Absolutely.
Please.
My grandmother was a huge inspiration. She was just kind of plugged into love. One of the things that my grandmother really provided for me in my life was a sense of tremendous faith and a sense of tremendous optimism. Now, when I was younger, I kind of mistook those qualities that she bestowed onto me as being weakness and as being ignorance. But as I got older, I started to realize that it was just a tremendous humility that she had about all the things that she couldn't explain, that she didn't know, all of the things that resided in the unseen and in the mysterious and the supernatural. There are many things that we know, that we can touch, that we can discuss, that we can analyze, but quite frankly, there's much, much more in the unseen that we can't explain. Now, my grandmother was a very tall woman. She was actually close to 6 foot tall, and she had really huge feet. They were long and skinny and just huge. So like any of us, she shopped according to her body shape and size, and the shoes that she always picked out for herself were always the same style. The toe was rounded or boxy because she didn't want to emphasize her foot's length, and then the heel was a short heel because she didn't want to emphasize her height. Now, my story isn't really about my grandmother's taste in shoes. It's really about the unseen. You just need that information for later. So, the women in my family, especially on my father's side, they have this tendency to come back and visit various family members after they have died. And the first time I remember this happening, it was when I was little. My grandmother would pull me down in her lap, and she would tell me this story about how her sister had come back to visit her in a dream. In the dream, she told my grandmother that she had found peace beyond a human comprehension, beyond all human comprehension. And I was little and I was bored by stories that any adult told me, so I'd try to like wiggle out of her lap and escape like a stray cat. And as soon as she finished the story, I would shoot out and I would go find my sister to play. I didn't think too much of it. But later, after my grandmother died, she actually showed up in my uncle's dream, and this time I was a lot older, and I really took the time to listen, because my uncle is a very practical, very business-oriented man, so he doesn't really spend a lot of time thinking about mysterious supernatural things. Now, in his dream, he was walking down the hall in my grandmother and my grandfather's house, and he was headed towards her bedroom, and he knew she was in there because coming from her room was the swelling, angelic, the most beautiful music that he had ever heard in his life. And spilling from the door was this bright, nutrient light. Now, as he was walking down the hall, he had this sense that he wasn't going to make it in time. So he quickly called out, "Are you still in pain?" And she said, "Not anymore," and the door shut. The third time it happened to me, but it didn't happen in a dream. I was actually awake. I was actually shopping for shoes. I was looking through the racks, and I noticed this pair of shoes that I knew wouldn't fit me and weren't my style, but I had this unreasonable impulse to reach up my hand, grab them, and try them on. I put them down on the floor, and as my foot slipped into them, I recognized that of course they were too big, because they were really for my grandmother. And at that moment, I was full of her presence, and I got the sense that she was with me, and we were shopping together. And I also got the sense that she had a knowledge that she knew. So I immediately apologized for my 20s. Because that's what you do when you realize your grandmother knows everything. And she let me know that she knew. She knew, and that it was okay, and that my life was going to be okay. And there was something about that moment. I really needed to hear that everything was going to be okay. And I got the distinct sense that me and my grandmother, we just continued shopping for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh my God, what a beautiful story, Lisa. Thank you. What a beautiful, beautiful story.
Thank you.
Wow. I want you to be thinking about why that was initially a difficult story for you to tell. I'm going to ask you that, and I'm going to ask Chuck the same question in just a moment. Right now, you're listening to Stories About Remembering and Telling on Storytime, KPFT 90.1 Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, with student storytellers Lisa Pearson and Chuck Hutchison. Chuck, we're going to go to you first, then I'm going to ask Lisa in a moment. What makes a difficult story for you? What makes a story really difficult to tell for you?
Short ones. I have a tendency to make a short story long. Yeah, no, it's. I think it's more the more dramatic ones, because I tend to go to the humorous side. Mm-hmm. I tend to always try to find humor in everything.
Yeah. So, when you say drama, you serious stuff?
Serious stuff. More
things that are very disclosing?
More realistic stuff, yeah.
Personal narratives?
Very personal narratives are difficult. Yeah. It's easier to be somebody else.
Yeah, one of my favorite books by Ellis is Letting the Wolf In. It's a great storytelling book about the difficulty in telling certain stories, and almost all of them are personal narratives. The kind of disclosure that we offer allows authenticity to enter our social relationship. And clearly we are really worried about whether or not people are going to accept us once we disclose this information, because once we do, we can't take it back. And yeah, short stories are tough. You know, they take a lot of time. Ben Franklin said it best, if I had more time, I'd write a shorter letter, right? Yes. Lisa, what made this story in particular difficult? You told it so beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
You really did. It was almost poetic. It was very mesmerized.
Well, I guess there's something about these kinds of, like, intersections that we have with divine things. It's really hard to try to capture that for another person, but I think that it's incredibly important because it's part of your heritage, and it's also important to realize that, like, we all have access to divine experiences, every single one of us.
We do. I started to talk about the story a couple of months ago, but I lost my beagle, Sadie, on July 2nd, and I think I might have mentioned it in class, as a matter of fact. And it was an incredible experience. She died in my arms. Many people who are pet owners relate to this. And she was the love of my life. And then, of course, then came my wife, is the old joke. But she was everything to me. And my wife was with me, and she knew how terribly upset I was. And after she died, I was heartbroken, as you might imagine. Within 30 minutes, I go back to my apartment complex, the condo complex, and I pull in the driveway like I always do, and off to the left, I see a young man, about 30 years old, I've never seen before, never saw him before in my life. He's wearing sunglasses, and he is walking two beagle puppies. Hmm. Two beagle puppies.
Wow.
He looks at me, just our eyes meet. And we're talking about a Saturday morning, so obviously mm-hmm. there's a lot of traffic going mm-hmm. on. And he looks at me, and I look at him, and he smiles mm-hmm. almost deliberately, mm-hmm. waves. And for that moment, I really felt incredibly special. I felt incredibly special, and I told my friends about it. I told Peggy, my wife, about it, and all of them concur. That is a message. You know, I'm not a particularly religious person, but when you were telling your story about these premonitions, you know, of course, there's also the wonderful story that there was a young man who had these incredible dreams, premonitions, incredible dreams. And it was always a crow that came to him, and the crow spoke to him and told him exactly what would happen. Well, the crow told him about gifts that he'd receive and times that he might be ill and other people that might get lost. And suddenly he had this incredible dream that his aunt was going to die, his favorite aunt. He wakes up the next morning and he's pretty rattled, and he finds out a few hours later that in fact his aunt is dead. The next night he's even more rattled because the crow came to him and said, your father is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can imagine how he felt. This is a young man with premonitions. They all come true. He decides to tell his father, so he wakes up the next morning and he says, Dad, I have to tell you about this dream. The crow came to me, and the crow was always right, and said that you were going to die. Oh, father said, it's a crow, it's just a dream, don't worry about it. But the young man knew that the father was rattled. You could just see it in his face. All day long, as a matter of fact, when the father was off to work, he just was waiting for the hammer to drop. You could just tell. Well, he came home at the end of the day, totally exhausted, as you might imagine, waiting for something to happen. And he's about to walk into the kitchen, and his son is there, and his wife is there. And he says to his family, I have had the most awful day. It has just been awful. And his wife says, you think you've had an awful day? The milkman just dropped dead on the front porch. So I just wanted to share that with you. Premonitions can be very, very strange, I know. But, you know, regardless of the story, even if it's a really goofy one like that, I'm glad you laughed because that's important.
Yeah.
I'm paying you to laugh.
Yes.
You know, I think that owning a story by internalizing it really gives any storyteller confidence. If you have desire in one hand and apprehension in the other, I think the key is to find the desire to be weightier than the apprehension that you might feel about delivering it. And I think that's what what Lisa did, and I know, Chuck, that's what you do as an actor in particular. You've really got to find yourself. Stories worth remembering and telling on Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal with Lisa Pearson and Chuck Hutchison. Chuck, you know, your story addresses misconceptions, taboos, and how they lead to regret. And I find that fascinating because these are all, in many ways, these are debilitating emotions. And tell us how that theme anchors your story, first of all.
Well, I think as we choose not to talk about things, especially taboos, because the definition is you don't talk about it.
Right.
Thanks, Confester.
Sure.
And if we did talk about it, even if it is in a humorous way or however which way we can begin a communication about it, mm-hmm. I think things can continue to get better. Mm-hmm. And the only way to, you know, start a journey is to take that first step. And so I think storytelling is a great way to start that.
Yeah. Tell us that story.
Okay, so myth versus reality. That's the topic today, kids. The year was 2009. My wife and I were living in California. We had decided that we were ready to have a child. Let me correct that. My wife had decided we were ready to have a child. But we had no idea how difficult it would be, how stressful, and for myself, how embarrassing. Well, after about 2 months of trying unsuccessfully, my wife had started to push the panic button. And 2 months after that, she dragged me in to see a fertility specialist to find out what the problem actually was. Now, this fertility specialist was a female. And she looked me dead in the eye with complete disdain and said, I'm going to be honest here, Mr. Hutchison. 9 times out of 10, it's the male. He's either completely infertile, low motility, or low sperm count. So there's really no point in going any further with any tests until we find out what your problem actually is. You know, the problem with the male. And she took pains to say male and not man. And I took that personal. So she then prescribed me to go to a lab and give a sample. Well, kids, I took this as a challenge, and I accepted it. Now, this is where the myth comes in. I've never given a sample for medical testing for whatever reason. My only experience with this comes from my encyclopedic knowledge of a chronicled knowledge of the American porno film industry. And in all of these films, there's always one thing in common. You go to an immaculate lobby. There's a busty brunette wearing a 3 sizes too small white Slut-a-ween nurse's outfit who escorts you to room number 3. And room number 3, you see this amazing lazy boy / massage chair thing made out of leather. And then you see the largest collection of porn ever assembled under one roof. Because, you know, you need that. And there's even like a little gay section. Now, granted, I'm not homosexual in any way, shape, or form, but I appreciate the attention to detail. That shows that they care, and that shows that they're responsible and they're professional.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, cue the music, the bad music, the bad lighting, you know what happens next. You fill the cup, everyone goes home happy. Well, here's the reality, kids. They sent me to a lab, the very same lab that you go give blood tests and urine samples to when you got to go for a job interview. And there's 15 to 20 people in the lobby. The lobby's super small. And the brunette behind the counter, well, his name was Tom. And he was kind of surly. And when I told him what I was there for, he kind of announced it and kind of looked at me disgustedly. He didn't escort me to the room, by the way. He pointed me over to, now, kids, I can't make this up, a unisex public restroom. A 5.5 foot by 5.5 foot room with only 4 items in it. A toilet, a sink, a mirror, and a little aluminum surgical end table with 3 drawers in it. Now, I didn't see a lazy boy, so I thought, okay, the porn's got to be in this little end table thing. So I started rattling through the drawers. There's no porn. All I found was feminine hygiene products and toilet paper. So, kids, every time I'm doing this at home, I'm in a reclined position. So this time I'm trying to do it standing up. It's not working. I'm getting discouraged. I decide I have to recline. So I only have a choice to sit on the toilet. Well, I'll try to do this, but the American standard pipe that comes out of the back of the wall that connects the toilet to the wall, because it's a tankless toilet, is digging into my lower lumbar region, and this is really upsetting my concentration. So this isn't going to work, right? So I'm thinking about quitting. But then I see my wife's face in my head. And I see the disappointment in her eyes, and I figure I have to do this. I have no choice. So my only choice is to lay on the ground. Now, I'm almost 6 feet tall, and this is a 5.5 foot by 5.5 foot room. You can imagine my position. And my only option, I don't want to touch the floor, because this is where they send guys to do this. How many guys would come before me? I can't guarantee their aim, and I don't want to touch the floor. So I have one choice. I have to disrobe, put all my clothes on the floor to act as a barrier between me and the floor. So I take up position. It's uncomfortable. And this is the point where I start getting into my own head. I start thinking about all the people who are outside who know what I'm doing in here. And if I were them, I would start hedging bets on how long this guy's going to take to finish. Are you going to take the over? Are you going to take the under? There's probably going to be a guy who's like, I bet he can't even do it. I bet he's going to come running out of his empty cup. Well, I got to prove this guy wrong. Then I start thinking about my father and my family and all the people in my life. And I decide right then and there, the line of my people will not end today. So I decided I was going to fill the cup. So I began to fill the cup. And I walked out of there with my head held high because, you know what, it's not easy to fill a cup. For the last 22 years of my life, I've been trained to miss. I walked out of there with my head high and my arms slightly away from my body because I didn't want to touch my clothes at this point. And kids, 4 days later, I found out I was a viable male candidate for fatherhood. 2 months after that, I got my wife pregnant with our first child. Kids, there's no end to what a man will do for his family. And if you ever find yourself in the same situation, I leave you with two things. One, take a disposable towel that you can leave behind. Two, please do not forget to bring your own porn.
Very good. You know, thank you. That was wonderful. You know, one of the things that I remember about you, Chuck, when you were in my class is that you were terribly shy, a lot of trepidation, and you had a difficult time describing things and painting verbal pictures.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, we're only together here for a few weeks, but my gosh, I'm going to take it upon myself to make this person the opposite of what I consider him to be. I'm going to make him descriptive. I'm going to make him talkative. I'm going to make him open. I'm going to make him less apprehensive. I'm going to make him descriptive. And I just want all of our listeners to know how damn brilliant I am.
You are.
I have done one heck of a job with you, Chuck. That was an amazing story. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was, to say that that was detailed and accurate, I suppose, is,
definitely.
Yeah, we have to take your word for it.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Was amazing. Thank you.
Tough
story to tell, though. You know, and you're right. From the standpoint of humor, I get a much better sense of what you're talking about. Humorous stories can be very difficult, and also, just as this closing, I just wanted to take a moment here and talk a little bit about the Storytellers Guild. We'll let everybody know where they can learn about personal narratives or tell their favorite fairy tale, because each one of you out there listening to us do have stories worth remembering and telling. And there's no better place to tell them than in the Houston Storytellers Story Swap at 7 p.m. on the third Tuesday of every month at St. Andrew's House on 18th and Heights. I'm proud to be the president of the Houston Storytellers Guild and can tell you that our members are really the nicest and most supportive people you'll meet. And be sure to check out our website at www.houstonstorytellers.org to keep up on events and more, including recordings of past story times. I think that you'll really appreciate that. You know, we are running out of time, literally, but I just loved the show so much. Frankly, more than I thought I would. And you folks just never cease to surprise me. And I thank you for that. Lisa and Chuck, thank you so much. So much. You really gave us a great recipe for what constitutes a story that is worth telling and worth remembering. Difficult stories that are tough to remember, tough to disclose, but at the same time are internalized. They define who you are. And we're so happy that you were able to share your personal definitions with us through your wonderful stories. I just thank you so much. Again, Lisa Pearson and Chuck Hutchison, for doing what storytellers do best, entertain, educate, and enchant. A story worth remembering and worth telling blends beautifully with Viktor Frankl's belief, that which would give light must endure burning. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing all of you a terrific weekend and reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 extension 308.